It's a sports Sunday, D-Day in D.C., Denton Day at the Denton Day on Twitter. Nationals baseball coming up here in about 40 minutes. They're in Arizona to close out that series. They've been swinging the bats really well this weekend, man. I'm excited to see what they do in the final game of that one. You can connect with me on Twitter at the Denton Day. I'm a little bit jealous of the New York Knicks. That is never a sentence that I thought would exit my lips, but I am. Watching the fun that they have had has had me reminiscing to an extent on what it was like when this city was winning championships. Now, I've never seen the football team win a championship, but I have to imagine that a lot of us who have not seen that, and those of you that have seen that but understand what it's like to be in the kind of drought that this city has been in, similar to what the Knicks had been in. Now, I think the Knicks are New York's top sport. I don't think, if I'm not in New York, so if I'm wrong here and you're a New York person, I apologize. But I would guess it goes Knicks, Yankees, Giants, Jets, or whatever.
I think Yankees might be number one.
Maybe, but the way that they celebrate the Knicks, what I've seen, I feel comfortable saying that the Knicks are number one, because I do feel like New York is
certainly
a basketball
right now.
Town.
I mean, sure, but the Yankees have such a history there, like going generations, you know?
Well, if they can get back to the World Series, we'll see how they're partying in the street when the Yankees get there. But I watch these parties in the street, man, and I'm like, man, what would that look like if we were winning championships again here? Because I remember when the Nats were winning in 2019 and how crazy the city was. I was working in town at the time for a morning show at Sirius XM. Had to get in early, right? The show was from 7 to 10. I'm in there probably like 5:45. And I'm like driving past the end of some of the fun because people were out celebrating, especially in the run in that, right? When you were playing the Dodgers and some of those games were kind of late. So you stay up and then you win, you beat the Dodgers, then you're partying late into the night. So you're like driving past some of that. And I distinctly remember when the Caps were in the Stanley Cup final and all of the fun that was, and having this like deep sense of FOMO. That was the one year of my professional career where I didn't live in Washington, D.C. I was a weekly newspaper sports editor in Bedford, Virginia. If you've never been there, it's a nice town, but it's like 3 hours away in central Virginia between Lynchburg and Roanoke. So far away from here. And I'm like living vicariously through social media, Twitter, Instagram. I got people that I knew from high school. They were out and about having fun, enjoying what it was like for a team to play in a Stanley Cup final and to compete for a championship. And I'm just watching what's happening in New York. And I'm like, man, I can't wait until those feelings come back here. And I feel comfortable saying that eventually they will. And maybe relatively soon. I do wonder, just because we're watching the Knicks, right? I do wonder what the environment would be like if, let's just say, in 3 or 4 years, we'll cross our fingers, cross your toes, that whoever the Wizards draft this year, they drill it, man. They get it right. And Trae Young's here for a while, and you see Atlanta Hawks Ice Trae, the one that the Knicks fans still talk about. I mean, we still get F. Trae Young chance now. They're competing for a championship, and they still hate that dude. Come on. Like, imagine what it's going to look like if Trae Young gets back to that form, but he's doing it in a Wizards uniform. And whoever they draft at number one or wherever they draft it, they decide to trade back. I don't think that's going to be the case, but maybe they do. But whoever they draft ends up being the next real face of the franchise. And Anthony Davis kind of gets his head out of his rear end and realizes maybe it actually would be fun to play basketball in Washington, D.C. Like, just imagine if the Wizards get to a point where they have not been in what's going on close to 60 years, right? I guess 50 years. I can't do math. It's going on 50 years, kind of similar to what is happening with the Knicks. I don't know that we in D.C. would react quite like the Knicks fans are for the Wizards, but I still think the environment would be crazy in the city. And like, I'm lusting for that one, man. I need that kind of that kind of energy. It would be like that if the Commanders win. We can all agree on that. If the Commanders win a Super Bowl, what you are seeing in New York, it's going to be like that here. Because I remember what it was when the Caps were here. Like when they actually won and you had people following them from, you know, corner to corner in the city. Like, oh, they're going to be in Georgetown. Let me take off work. Go. I work in, you know, Southeast. Let me take off work, go completely across the city to see a drunken Alex Ovechkin swimming in a fountain. Oh, they're going to be at a Nats game? Let me take off work. I'm going to go down to see these dudes pounding beers. They're on U Street. Sick. I'm on U Street, right? Like, you had people chasing them effectively around the city. And you guys, look, man, if you work in any capacity in the city, even if you don't work and you've been to the city, maybe you don't work in the city and you don't even go to the city because you know driving and getting around sucks, but you still had people making it work just to get from point A to point B to point C to see these guys, to follow these guys. I'm like jealous of it, man. I really am. Now, I kind of hope the Knicks lose. If I'm just being a little bit more cynical, I have no tie to New York other than the fact that I got friends that live there, but they're not Knicks fans. And I kind of want to see them experience more pain. And it would be the most hilarious thing to go up 2-0 and then to lose 4 in a row and have the Spurs just completely take momentum. I also like Victor Wembanyama, so there is a little bit of that in there as well. But it just gets me juiced up to think of, like, what's it going to look like when this city is back, when the District of Champions is, in fact, back. And maybe the Nationals get there in the next couple of years. You know, outside of maybe the Capitals, because there's going to, you know, once Ovechkin wraps it up and retires, maybe then you completely reorganize the roster. There's good pieces on the team right now, but it doesn't feel like they're in a position where they're going to be competing for championships anytime in the next couple of years. You just got to end the Ovechkin era, which, by the way, I'm pretty okay with just letting Alex Ovechkin ride it off here until the wheels fall off. It would be a massive disgrace if he wears any other uniform than that of a Washington Capital. So if he wants to play another year or two, play another year or two. That's fine with me as far as I'm concerned. Let's get that bad boy up to 1,000 goals and make that record really, really hard to break for whoever it is that is going to come next, right? But I think the other three teams, certainly with Washington, I'm certainly with the Commanders, I said Washington, like I'm not talking about three teams in the district. Can you tell I've been doing national stuff a little bit too frequently? But certainly with the Commanders, regardless of what they're doing at wide receiver, we spent a lot of time talking about Brandon Ayuk because of this like weird video that he put up on social media today. Regardless of what happens with Brandon Ayuk, I am confident that the season the Commanders are going to have in 2026 is going to be far greater than the disaster that was 2025. It's going to be much more like 24 than it was like 25. Largely because Jaden Daniels is going to be much more like the quarterback in 2024 than he was in 2025. You can accuse me of a lot of things. I mean, please don't. But you could accuse me of a lot of things. You will never be able to accuse me of being a guy that's jumping off the Jaden bandwagon. I was one of the first people in the city on it because I loved him at LSU and everyone was fawning over Sam Howell here. I am confident that 2025 is going to be a massive outlier. When you look at his career broadly, when he eventually retires, right, he gets 10 to 15 years here in DC. That 2025 season is going to be a massive outlier from what ends up being a great career. I'm confident in that. I don't have any, this is not Robert, it's nothing like that. I'm confident that Jaden is going to have a sensational year in 2026. So they're in a position right now where I think they're going to be competing for the division title, and then I'm going to take my chances with five in the postseason against anybody, because really it does come down to quarterback play. And at least this year, the defense is strong enough, and kudos to Adam Peters, the personnel on defense is strong enough to where they're going to be able to hold their own against a lot of these offenses in the NFL. I've been out there at practice once. I'll be out there again this week, but I've been out there at practice once. Everyone's selling hope at OTAs. This is not new. Everyone thinks that they're going to have a great year. But it has been nice to see in watching them practice. All right, I can put the pieces of the puzzle together a little bit and see what they're trying to do on defense. I can put the pieces of the puzzle together and be like, yeah, they're faster, like way faster. They're way more athletic. They got way more dudes that can get after the passer. Could not do that in 2025. One of my football mantras, I live by this. You can never have too many guys that can rush the passer. 2025 showed us that you can absolutely have nobody that can rush the passer. And it sucks when that's your reality. But you can never have too many guys that can rush the passer. The Commanders have a good group of dudes that can get after the quarterback this year. And that is really exciting. With Owe, with Kalavon Chasen, with when he's healthy, Dorrance Armstrong, they got a lot of dudes. They can maneuver around, settle to a bunch of different places. They can use Daron Payne in a couple of different ways. Like, gone are the days where we're going to have to see, as fans, Daron Payne play outside because nobody on the outside knows how to set a damn edge. And you're just getting blown through whenever you play even a remotely average running back. That's not the case anymore. This defense, they got dudes that can play the run. Sonny Styles already wearing a green dot, seeing those pictures. I mean, how you not steamed up for that one? Their rookie is already wearing a green dot. Home run. You wanted a guy because you thought he was athletic as hell and he was smart as hell. Boom. You drilled it. So you look at them and say, all right, they're in a good position to potentially be competing for championships. The Nationals offense has been crazy. I don't know that they're competing for a championship this year, but we've seen crazier things in Major League Baseball. If they want to take a big swing at the trade deadline, not knowing what 2027 is going to look like, I do think that's actually going to impact positively a couple of teams in Major League Baseball this year, because you have no idea if you're playing in 2027. And because I would say that most people across Major League Baseball realize that in some capacity, you're going to have to make some pretty significant roster adjustments in 2028, whether that be in anticipation of a salary floor or be in anticipation of a salary cap. You're going to have to make some adjustments roster-wise, so maybe you do take a big swing. If Washington could land another big bat, maybe another pitcher, I'm not saying they're going to be in the market for Tarek Skubal. Maybe you want them to sell more than anything, but the way that they're playing right now, if the defense tightens up, the bats are hotter than hell right now. They're hotter than hell in the desert, and they just happen to be in the desert right now. They're going to take over here on the airwaves in about 30 minutes here on 106.7 The Fan. But I like the direction the Nationals are going. I like the direction the Wizards are going. So I'm looking at what's happening with the Knicks right now and being like, that's going to be this city here soon. And then maybe we'll get not Fat Joe and Jadakiss, who did do an impromptu press conference in between press conferences today at NBA Finals media availability. But if we get to a position where our teams are constantly competing, Wale's around, man. We know he's a diehard fan. I'm going to get Wale at some of these press conferences, and he can do media availability similar to what Fat Joe and Jadakiss are doing, because we know he's a diehard fan of all these teams. Like, there's so many similarities between, like, true big market teams, and I'm tired of being treated, it feels like at times, that, especially in the basketball scene, the DC is not a big market team. I'm just itching and waiting for the time where the Wizards get back to the level that I've never seen. I saw the Wall and Beal stuff. That was fun. I've never seen a conference championship before. I didn't see a conference championship with a football team until 2024. And then that happened. So who's to say the Wizards can't do it? I think the Eastern Conference next year is not going to be a little bit suspect again anyway. So there's room for the Wizards to take advantage of that. When this town gets back, though, man, I think we're going to be partying like New York is. Maybe they're not going to shut down watch parties, though. LOL. I'm Denton Day. It's Sports Sunday in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on the Odyssey app as well. Coming up, back to football. We got some news on what the plan is for Terry McLaurin. How does that impact the offense? We'll dive into it next. I'm Denton Day, Sports Sunday, D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan, live on the Odyssey app as well. You can tweet me at The Denton Day. I had said in a previous segment, I've been out at Commanders practice once so far this offseason. They were in the bubble when I was out there. But it was really exciting to see, one, the team practicing again, but also to feel the energy I don't really know how to describe this. And if this sounds a little like condescending because the big bad media guy gets to go and most people don't, I apologize. But it just feels like there is a level of energy that was present at the practice that I went to. And I spoke to a few people that were at the second practice last week that I did not go to. And they said it remained. That energy was still there. There just feels like there's another level of energy at these practices that is so significantly more enjoyable than it was in 2025. It felt like, and there were a lot of reasons for this, but it felt like there was this dark cloud over the 2025 offseason. Some of that was because everybody wanted Terry there and Terry was not there. I don't hold that against him. It's business. The NFL is a business. You only have so long in this league. You got to get your money when you get it. I think looking back on it, both sides would have said we should have handled this differently. That doesn't make up for all of the dark cloud. You know, you had a Noah Brown injury in OTAs before we got to training camp that really limited the amount of wide receivers. But even just watching the wide receivers practice last year, you were just like, oh, this is going to be tough, man. If this Terry deal doesn't get done, this is going to be tough because guys weren't able to separate. That is not the case, it feels like, anymore. I think in watching Luke McCaffrey and Jalen Lane in specific, because I do think it's fair to say those guys have some question marks. We've seen some positive things from Luke McCaffrey, but we haven't seen a ton of positive from Luke McCaffrey. You're hanging on to moments right now, hoping that those moments can, you know, become something that is sustainable long term for a guy that could potentially be a number three, or dare I say, number two wide receiver. Two might be a stretch, but if you're a number three wide receiver for a good football team, that's a pretty nice position to be in. Jalen Lane is kind of similar. We haven't seen as much of him because he's only been here for a year, but you've seen a few moments where you're like, man, if we can just cultivate that and have that be consistent, he could be a really good player here. Obviously, both of those two guys happen to be really, really excellent at special teams, with Lane in the punt game and then Luke McCaffrey in the kick return game. People laugh at me. It's not a joke. If McCaffrey didn't get hurt in 2025, he at the very least would have been, I think, a second-team All-Pro, but he would have been flirting with being an All-Pro kick returner. I really do think he was that good. He was on the constant verge of breaking plays in the kick return game, and you got to have a guy that can do that on special teams. I say all that to say, it's fun to see the wide receivers. I care so much more about 17. You care so much more about 17. Because at least as we sit here now in June, I mean, and again, take this with a, not just a pinch of salt, take this with a bottle of salt right now, because it is only June. But as we sit here in June, it does feel ever so slightly validating that you have an offensive coordinator in David Blough that feels the same way that a lot of us do about 17 and recognizes he needs the ball. It needs to be a priority to get Terry McLaurin the football. If we are going to look at him as a number one wide receiver, and I think if we took away nothing else from 2025, like if you took away nothing else, I am begging and pleading, watch the games where Terry McLaurin did not play, and then watch the games where he did play. There is a clear head-over-heels difference in the way that he played wide receiver versus the way anybody else played wide receiver on the roster last year. Like, clear as day. That's a legit number one wide receiver, even if you think, well, he's getting old and the athleticism is going to fade. Even if you think, well, he still hasn't had production at the level of a legitimate number one, which in my mind is like a 1,200-yard season. 1,000-yard seasons, admittedly, in 2026 are not impressive. You play 17 games. That's like 60 yards a game. That's not impressive. The new, what 1,000 yards was in a 16-game season, or really what 1,000 yards was in a 14-game season when guys started doing it on a much more regular basis, that to me is now 1,200 yards. You got to be approaching 1,200 yards for me to view you as someone like you viewed who was getting 1,000 yards in 14 games. But Terry has never been able to do that, largely because it felt like he was not given the ball a ton. And we'd be constantly asking and begging and pleading, give 17 the ball, give 17 opportunities to get the ball. There's no reason why he cannot be a guy that's going for 1,200 yards. There's no reason he cannot be a guy that's approaching 80, 90, maybe even triple digits in the reception category on a yearly basis. Obviously, it would have been nice to do these things like 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago, but we saw in year number one with Jaden Daniels, when it was an effort at times to get Terry the ball, good things happened. So when David Blau says we're going to get him 10 targets a game, I did a little bit of research and I was like, all right, well, how many times has that happened? Like, if we look at the course of Terry McLaurin's career, how many times has it happened that he has gotten 10 targets in a game? And the numbers were stunning. The guy's played 111 games. This includes regular season and postseason. 107 in the regular season, 4 in the postseason. God, that number hurts. But he's played 111 games. He has finished with 10-plus targets in only 22 of those games. That's a 20% clip. This guy's been the number one wide receiver for just about his entire tenure here. And in 111 games, he's gotten 10 targets 22 times. One of those wasn't a playoff game. It was the Tampa Bay game in 2024. He got 10 targets. That's 20% of the time. I did more, though. I did more research. Look at me. I'm doing research on a Sunday, and I'm doing it for you. You're welcome. In 13 of the 22 games in which he was targeted 10 times, he caught a touchdown pass. That doesn't feel like something we should just throw by the wayside. That, to me, signals when you get this guy the football, plays are made. Good things happen. Because there's a lot of guys that are targeted significantly more than Terry McLaurin, and they're not always coming away with big-time touchdown numbers. I mean, that's over 50% of the games that he's targeted 10-plus times, he's come away with a touchdown, and in some of those games, he caught 2 touchdowns. So he's putting points up on the board. It is, for all of the analytic gurus, the nerds that are in the front office, nerds as a friendly word, for all of the smart people with Ivy League degrees that they brought in to do the math, that feels like the obvious math. Hey, when we throw him the ball, plays are made. We should do that more. We should not worry about throwing to wide receiver twos and wide receiver threes. We should not take this approach of the scheme dictates where it's going. No, throw to your best player. And if teams start to kind of do what they did in 2024, where they're bracketing him, there's help over the top, and they start to do that, well, then you build the roster out the rest of the way, and you have some guys that you can trust. And I feel like in 2026, the way the roster is built, if you're going to bracket Terry McLaurin, I feel pretty good about the other guys on the roster. Now with Chigakonkwo as a part of the mix, with Treylon Burks as a part of the mix on a more long-term standpoint, I think Diami Brown's going to regress positively into what he was in 2024, not what he was with Jacksonville in 2025. I still don't think that Diami's like a legit number two wide receiver, but I think he's a capable wide receiver who can compete for wide receiver three. I'm really excited about the kid from Clemson. I think he's going to really blow the doors off of some defenses, and I think some expectations that fans might have. But it's very simple to me. Throw the ball to 17. There's no reason why, considering the money that he's getting, not that that should be a massive determining factor, but it is, considering the money he's getting, but also considering how well the offense performed when he was a massive focal point in 2024, he should be getting the ball all of the time. And that 10 target, if he plays 17 games this year, he should have 10 targets in at least 9 of those games. Consistently. Hopefully more than that. If we can get it at like 12, 13, that would be sensational. It's D-Day in D.C. It's a sports set, Sunday in 106.7 The Fan. When we get back, we'll get you set for Nationals baseball, plus a rather hilarious incident that took place in a Mystics game yesterday. We dive into it as we close up shop next. It's been a fun show. Sports Sunday. D-Day in D.C., 106.7 The Fan. Nats and Diamondbacks coming up from Arizona. Final one of the set. Been a good few days for the Nationals. Offense humming. They're game over 500. They've outscored the Diamondbacks 20-2 in the two matchups. Now, I'm a bit of a gambler. I like to make a little bit of money. if I was in your position, seeing as there's been 20 runs scored by the Nationals in the last two games, this might be a good play to maybe dip into the under a little bit. It's very rare that we see, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility, but very rare that we see a three-game set with a team just going absolutely bonkers in all three of the games offensively. So that might just be if you want to make a little bit of money on a Sunday. It's Cade Cavalli taking on a former longtime Washington National, a long time as in 16 games here, Mike Soroka. I'm excited to see what Cavalli is going to look like. Obviously, when you though watch the Nationals, you want to see the offense. You know, James Wood already with 17 homers on the year. C.J. Abrams has been playing fantastic. Baseball is such a weird sport in the sense that you get really excited to see the young guys playing well, and then you don't really know what their future is going to look like. There's already been rumors with C.J. Abrams as to the potential of him being moved to the trade deadline. Look, man, I understand the business of it. I understand you got to do whatever is best for you in the long term and whatever long term looks like for you. But damn it, it's been fun to watch these two guys play, specifically this year. It's been fun to watch the entire operation go for Washington. It's just fun to see a lot of big-time offense. It's felt like it's been such a long time where watching the Nationals on offense has been fun. I mean, really dating back to the World Series, because we know this, and it's been spoken about at length here on this station. The Nats got screwed after the 19 World Series. They didn't fully get to celebrate it, meaning they didn't fully reap the financial benefits from it. I don't know how much that would have mattered long-term, because we know the Lerners aren't exactly the biggest spenders in the world, but we never fully got to see what it would have looked like with a full season after the 2019 run, what this team could have done because of the COVID, the shortened season, and the mess that transpired after that. But it's been really fun to watch this entire operation and this offense go for Washington. So I'm excited to see what they do today against Arizona. And we're hoping that we break the brooms out, get to two games over 500, and then keep this bad boy moving if you are the Nationals, and see how close you can get to being over, or see how close you can get, how far above 500, rather, you can get before we get to the MLB trade deadline. I mean, they got a away set against San Francisco following this one. Then they're home against Seattle, Kansas City, away against Tampa. That's their next few. There are a lot of winnable games in that stretch. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that if they really start to string something together here, you're looking at 8, 9, potentially 10 games over 500. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but when you have an offense that's as explosive as Washington has put together, it does feel like it's hard not to get ahead of yourself, at least a tiny little bit. So pregame starts in a couple of minutes here on 106.7 The Fan. Then you'll get the call of the game as well. I did want to end with this because I saw this video from the Mystics and the head coach, Sidney Johnson. He got ejected in the team's 32-point loss to the Atlanta Dream on Saturday, but he got ejected in a way where he had to be walked off by police officers. And I'm sure there's going to be, I haven't looked for a statement, but I'm sure if there hasn't been one yet, there will be one that says, you know, I apologize for the actions. This is embarrassing, things of that nature. I reject that. This is awesome. If the officials are going to do something in a game that is bad, argue it. And you want to talk about getting the most out of the argument? If you got to get escorted by police officers off of the floor, that's the guy that got the most out of the moment. Do I want this to happen on a regular basis? No, but the occasional ejection where you're escorted off by police officers, I say that like I've ever actually seen that before, but the occasional ejection because you're standing up for, what's that?
Even Bobby Knight never got ejected and had an escort like that.
I think the police officers were afraid of Bob Knight, because I think that Indiana stick carried a little bit more weight in Bloomington than the Mystics do, unfortunately, here in DC. But I love that he stood up for his team, and that's like the overarching thing. Like, you don't obviously want to get escorted off by police officers on a regular basis, but the idea of standing up for your team and being so passionate about it that it results in an ejection like this is something that I can get behind. So I'm giving him a round of applause. I loved what I saw from that, and I hope that lights a little bit of a fire under the Mystics to the point where they're not losing by 32 again to the Atlanta Dream. But I love the drama of it, man. I love the drama. I've been Denton Day. This has been fun, man. You know, a sports Sunday following up the legend Steve Zabin. leading you into Nationals baseball where they're looking to sweep Arizona. It's been a great show. Big thanks to Meadow Chris running the ones and twos in our DC studios. Thanks to everyone who hung out with me, some tweeters, some callers. It was all a bunch of fun. You can follow me on Twitter at The Denton Day. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Enjoy some Nationals baseball. Break the brooms out, baby. Enjoy it.